just wanted to actually just catch up with you and see where you are with what you're doing with your new project and how life is for you at the moment. I know you're just about to, are you just rehearsing just now?
Yeah, we're about a week, 7 or 8 days into, I'm doing the full Monty. It's the play of the film, written by the same fellow, which is brilliant. And it's a very, very, as you would imagine, a very funny piece of work. And we're sort of a week in. We've got another sort of 3 weeks of rehearsal to go, and then we open in Cheltenham, and then we tour for about 7 or 8 months. So yeah, full on. It's great fun.
You must be shattered though. You're tired trying to manage everything.
I love the energy of it. I love making. I just love making. And when you start on something new, you have, I mean, we've all had the script, and I auditioned for this about 7 or 8 months ago. So you have the script, and you know what the written word says. But what you're going to do with that is something else entirely. And so you're never quite sure what's going to happen until you're in the room with everybody else. And I kind of love that. And because you're starting afresh, it's an existing piece of writing, but it's an absolutely brand new production with a whole bunch of actors, directors, costume people, stage managers who have never done this before. So it's really exciting. And I just love this part of the process, the just being at the start of the making, because anything could happen. We're just sort of going through it and rehearsing it at the moment. It's great.
Oh, that's brilliant. I used to work on musicals, and they had this real sort of vibe to them. You know, energy, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. What did you do on musicals?
I was a dresser.
Oh, yeah, but brilliant. But brilliant. But it's like one of the most, in a musical, one of the most important jobs, because there's so many quick changes in a musical.
Yeah, it was just like, yeah, you kept you on your toes and you had like, I don't know, 20 seconds to check. You know, it was just brilliant. I loved that energy and that rush, I suppose, of having to get it right quickly. And,
was that in Manchester?
It was in Manchester, yeah. It was, I can't remember, was it the Blues Brothers? I think it was. I worked on for quite a while. I was just brilliant, and the music, and you know, I just loved it.
They're hugely uplifting things, musicals. And actually, there is a musical version of this, which I think is set in the States, which quite a few of my mates have done actually. But this is the straight play. We've got a lot of music in it. And there's a very famous sequence at the end, which involves basically a striptease and spoiler alert. But and as in the film, almost exactly in the film, as I say, written by the same fellow, Simon Beaufoy. And it's I love the energy of a musical. There is something about just giving people a good time. And I watch quite a lot of musicals. My daughters love going to musicals, and I've been in a few myself, and I just love them. The difference between just the energy of an audience before the musical starts versus the energy of an audience after the musical is finished, the difference between those two things. And it's the same for performers, you know, even if you're doing it 7-8 times a week, if you're doing a panto 12 times a week, it's just the joy of, you know, whacking it out there and raising people's spirits, I think.
Oh, yeah, I don't know why I connected that, because it's not a musical, is it, the Full Monty? But there's a lot of music in it, maybe. That's what I was thinking.
And you'd be right. There is a lot of music in it, and we've got a lot of music in ours. We're not singing per se, but there is a lot of music. It's the soundtrack to their working lives. It's set in 1997. That's when the film first came out. And so we've got a kind of soundtrack very much based around that neck of the woods. So it's great fun.
Fantastic. I just think it's a brilliant play. I mean, I just think there's such a good story to it and a good message. So
yeah, and it's very timely. You know, it's about a group of men and women who've lost their jobs in the steelworks in Sheffield and what they do, and it looks at all sorts of things, but it's quite an interesting study of masculinity, what it is to be a man and what it is to be a man at that time if you lost your job. And but it also investigates all sorts of sort of things in terms of male depression and fat shaming and body image, all sorts of interesting areas. Each of the characters have problems and issues to overcome. So in that kind of way, it's quite meaty as subject matter. And yeah, really enjoy it.
Great. Well, there you go. You can go and have a look on the website and go see Belle Ward in the theatre if you wish to. But wish you all the best with it. I think it'd be great.
Thank you. Yeah.
And unfortunately,
looking forward to it.
it's landed during the festival, and as a few people who will be listening will know that Bill was hoping to join us, but he's not. There's a few disappointed people because we just think you're brilliant, actually, Bill. It's just lovely.
Oh, God,
your energy and your the way that you speak to people, and the way, I think it's the way that you treat everybody as if, well, we are equals. I mean, I really get on with people who do that, you know, and it doesn't matter who they are, what they do in life. It doesn't matter whether you're a photographer with a name and not a photographer, just some person who, we're all the same, aren't we? And I get on particularly well with people that treat everybody in the same. Does that make sense to you? And you do that really well.
Yeah, sure. Well, that's really kind of you. Thank you. I'm so sad not to be able to make it. I asked for the time off and they just couldn't do it. And I'm so sorry. But it's okay. My goodness me, you're going to have a good time.
We are going to have a good time. We are. Mm. I've got a sauna coming in, a Lochside sauna.
Have you?
Yes.
Brilliant.
And a Kayleigh band and lots of things. Some other music happening, I think. We might be having some other music happening, but I won't give that away. Yes, it's going to be great. But what I would say is there will be more years. So.
Oh, great. Well, fingers. I would love to. I was so sorry not to be able to make it.
That's
so.
Okay.
So. Yeah, but I'm sure it will be magnificent.
It will be. So when I met you a few weeks ago, you were just starting. You just showed me some images of ICM in the water. And I just said, oh, love them. Absolutely love them. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, it's a sort of, I've called it, there's a word that's being used a lot in ICM at the moment, which is immersive. And it's an interesting word because I think all photography, to some extent, regardless of discipline, is immersive, because all photography, to some extent, you lose yourself in the moment when it really sort of works, and there is that sense of you connecting with where you are around you, and everything else disappears. Just everything else disappears. Yeah. There is only you and where you are, and that is it. Mm-hmm. And that's a kind of sort of wholly immersive, when it works really well, in my experience, it's a wholly immersive experience. Yeah. And I know you take a lot of photographs in the water as well, yeah. And must have been on a similar, I would imagine, kind of journey to this, isn't it? And I've read some of the stuff that you've written about it, actually, for your exhibition. You very kindly gave me, well, I ran off with them anyway, a couple of your books. And it's you're huge on this subject yourself, aren't you, in terms of not just standing by but participating, not just being on the edge of something but being part of it. And I have as you do, I have a very similar feeling as that. And it is that thing of, for me, this is about trying to sort of become a part of the thing that you're photographing and not just a spectator. Mm-hmm. And in that sense of instead of just being on the outside looking in, but sort of wholly becoming a part of it. And in the theatrical world, people have talked about immersive theatre for quite some time. Funnily enough, actually, I'm about to see this week in the evenings when I should be, I have already learnt my lines. I promise I've already learnt my lines. But when I should be learning my dance steps, I promise I am already learning my dance steps. But when I'm not doing those things, I'm going to see two pieces of immersive theatre this week, actually. I'm going to see Cabaret at the Playhouse Theatre. We're rehearsing in London. So I've used that. I live in Bristol. So I've used this opportunity to go and see as much new stuff as I can, or as much stuff as I can see in the time that I have, and particularly things that I've been wanting to see for a while. And two of those, actually three of those, I'm seeing another one next week, are pieces of immersive theatre. One is Cabaret, which is at the Playhouse Theatre. Another is The Burnt City, which is by a company called Punch Drunk, who I will talk about in a second. And the third one is Guys and Dolls, which is at the Bridge Theatre. And all wonderful pieces of work in their own right, all very, very different in their own right, but all carrying that what would be described theatrically as immersive. And in the theatrical world, what that tends to mean is a world, literally a world. You build a world. And how theatre generally works is that you've got what's called a fourth wall, which is you've got the performers, let's say, on a stage in a proscenium arch theatre. So like most of the older theatres in this country, you have a building with a theatre on with a stage at the end of it and an audience in front of it. And then you have a kind of arch shape, which is the kind of the bit in between the audience and the stage. And that's and so from a theatrical point of view, if you're one of the actors on that stage, you have a thing called the fourth wall. And the fourth wall is the bit that separates between you and the audience.
Okay.
And what you talk a lot about in the theatre is whether you break the fourth wall or not, whether you talk directly to the audience where you go through it and look at the audience and talk to them or not.
Yeah.
And in immersive theatre, the fourth wall is broken all the time, because instead of there being a wall between you and the actors, there isn't at all. There's a whole world. So one of the first theatre companies, the experts in this, is a company called Punch Drunk, who've been around for around 20 years. And they were made the first piece of immersive theatre I ever saw, which was back in 2007. And it was called The Mask of the Red Death, which was based on a piece of theatre based on an Edgar Allan Poe novel. And it was extraordinary. It was in the Battersea Arts Centre, which was the old Battersea Town Hall, and they just took it over. And in the Battersea Arts Centre, they turned it into the world of The Mask of the Red Death. And you couldn't get many audience in there at any one time, maybe 20 or 30. And when you went in, you had no idea where you were going. And there were just rooms. And so you worked your way through. There was no route. You have to choose where you go. No one to show you. Occasionally, an actor or playing a character might sort of lead you by the hand or kind of beckon you over to somewhere to ask you to look at something. But essentially, all of the choices, you can choose to do that or not. And all the choices are yours. And so what you've got is this just entire world, which you, as an audience member, become part of. And that's different to what you would usually experience in the theatre. You're sitting in a seat looking at a world on a stage, but you're not part of it. It's 10 metres away from you. Or if you're in the cheap seats where I usually go, about right at the very top, about 30 yards away from you. But so that's kind of in my world, that's the word, that's what immersive means. It means a lack of separation between the audience and the thing that they have come to watch. And so for me, in photography, it means the same kind of a thing, is just putting yourself in the world that you are photographing, kind of becoming a part of it, as opposed to just standing on the outside of it at arm's length and looking in. And for me, the benefits of doing something like that are just incalculable, just because instead of sort of feeling removed from the thing that you're photographing, you start to be with it and move with it. And you will know from all of your wonderful water photography, is it a similar thing for you?
You know, you were just talking there, and you've obviously thought that through. And I think for me, it was something that I didn't really think through. I just did it instinctively. But as you're talking about it, it starts to make sense. And I think I do that quite a lot with a lot of things. I'll do things and I'll just follow whatever I think feels right. And then I'll kind of look at it afterwards and go, oh, right, that's why I did that. But I think it is, the answer to that really is yes. Yeah, absolutely. There's no, it's the experience, I think, is totally different. So standing on the beach and photographing whatever it is, the waves or the scene, that's a very different experience to getting a wetsuit on and jumping in the sea. A part of the experience is the being in the sea. So you've got the two things going on, haven't you? You haven't just got photography. It's a mix. Mm. It's also a challenge, which I think is probably one of the big things for me. It's different. And it, but mostly, most of all, I have so much fun when I'm doing it. And it's just...
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Don't we dismiss that? Is that not something that we shouldn't dismiss? Because it's like, do you know what? It's just brilliant. And I come out feeling, that was amazing. Yeah, is that same for you as well then?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And it really, it's so important, this, isn't it? In a kind of having fun. The very first time I've been working on, it's taken a while to get to this point. I've had various different versions of it in a kind of working your way up kind of a thing. And I had the first sort of thing with my proper DSLR in a proper, well, it was meant to be watertight. It wasn't.
Never is. The first one never is.
Yeah, never mind. Yeah, and but the very first day, I did that. I came out grinning my head off. Yeah. It was the most fun that I had had with a camera for years. And it is that sense of, it's like you say, it's a mixture of so many things, but the movement part of it was a big part of it for me, just the physicality of it. And because so often with a camera, we're stationary and static, and in the old days on a tripod, and cameras have got sort of better with in terms of shape reduction and all that kind of stuff, so you don't need tripods possibly as often as you used to. And in the sort of the ITM world and multiple exposure world, you might be using a tripod, but you're probably not. And so in that kind of a sense, I just love the movement part of it, and also the crashing through the waves part of it is such good fun, and it's just brilliant. And I know you're a surfer, aren't you? And you've spent a lot.
But, I mean, the word surfer, you know, we use that loosely.
Yeah. Well, me too. And it is that sense that, you know, I lapsed in my case. I get in the water with a board about once a year now, and whenever we go on holiday. But it is that sense of moving with the water. And that's always been the thing about surfing. And in Hawaii, there's a religion. It's a very much a religious thing. It always was, in terms of moving with the water. And there is that sense of sort of moving through the water, moving with the water, with or without a camera, that I think everyone can relate to. There is a joy in doing that, you know, the whole explosion in wild swimming during the pandemic, all of that kind of a thing. And so I'm sure for you as well, to some level, it is that sense of being able to take your camera somewhere where you've already been. On a surfboard or on a bodyboard, or that it's sort of in that little pocket of energy of when a wave breaks. It's such a wonderful place to be, and it doesn't have to be 10 feet high. That pocket of energy, and
preferably,
do you know what
not.
I mean? Yes, exactly. If it is, it's going to hurt, and you're gonna get it caught in the washing machine a bit. But you know, it's sort of waves in this country anyway, here in the UK, sort of 2 foot, 3 foot, all of that kind of stuff is absolutely fine, and there is an energy in there. And I do think one of the things that I've really got from this project, and one of the reasons why I was literally grinning my head off when I walked out the water the very first time, was that sense of energy and being in a position to kind of, and we've talked about this before, sort of photographic language and capturing energy, but it's not capturing it, it's sort of, I don't know, working with it, or but it just becoming a bit of a part of you, and some of that ending up on the sensor of the camera. And I just kind of, it's a sort of symbiotic relationship that, and I really like it. No, you know, you're not sort of taking a piece of the ocean away with you, but you are sort of taking partly the feeling of being in the water away with you. And one of the other things that I really like about this, and specifically for me, for the ICM part of it, is I did a project on starlings and the murmuration, which I think we talked about actually a while ago. And one of the things that I really liked about that was the mess. It was the mess of it. It was the visceral thrill of being underneath, you know, 50, 60,000 starlings as they come into land. And so many photography projects that I'd seen had been sort of perfect curves and fractals, but actually my experience of it had been sort of really messy and specifically noisy, really noisy when 50 or 60,000 of these creatures land. Really, I mean, it's not quite on top of you, but sometimes we live in Bristol and the Somerset Levels, it happens, and sometimes they're only 20 yards away, 15 yards away, and sometimes to get to that spot they've literally gone straight over the top of your head. So in that kind of way, and so it was the energy of that, the mess of that, and in an ICM way, that's partly been my joy with this, is the kind of the energy and the mess of it as much as anything else. And what happens if the shutter stays open for a bit whilst you're being tumbled around as the wave breaks? It's that kind of a thing. And it's that, from a surfing point of view, you'll know that feeling, that little pocket of energy as the wave breaks, and just following it along and sort of doing a similar thing with a camera and you know what happens in that place. It's just been a lot of fun, and I've really, really enjoyed it. And part of one of the other things I've really enjoyed about it is the sort of the all-weather nature of it. You're getting wet anyway. It just doesn't matter what the weather's like. And actually, in loads of ways, I've had some wonderful evenings. I'm usually going out in the evenings, actually, with this project at the moment, but had some wonderful evenings and some beautiful calm sunsets and it's lovely calm water. But this summer in particular, some really, really stormy seas. And that's been really good fun, in a kind of, obviously not going out in a named storm, because, you know, that's life-threatening and that's not in a particularly intelligent thing to do if you're a father of two daughters. So you have to be very careful. But also, by the same token, after that storm has passed, it leaves the sea churned up for a fair few days afterwards. And just going out and what's left is, but I've really enjoyed that, actually. And so that I've had one or two sort of evenings when the sun isn't shining and all of that, and it's sort of overcast and quite heavy and quite stormy, and that's just been equally as magnificent. So yeah, it's just been great fun.
That's great. And I wonder how much of it is, for me, it's definitely tied up with well-being, because actually, as you were saying, that going out in all weathers, that being in the water, sometimes I don't take my camera off. I'm a wild swimmer. I'm saying about wild swimmer, I don't actually swim. I just go in and pootle about and then come back out. It's the cold. It's the cold immersion that's helpful for me in being outdoors. And the walk there, you know, the whole experience of it. So I don't always have my camera with me, and it doesn't always matter that I've not got my camera. So it's sometimes camera, sometimes not. And I don't know why the difference would be. I suppose if the conditions are spectacular, I'd be going, I'd like to capture that on camera. But I think that I wonder if that sort of thing that we've both got, we've both got a history of surf. If you've surfed, you kind of know, don't you? You're a sort of sea person. There are people that are sea people, aren't they? Yeah. But you also understand the sea, I think, particularly with surfing, more than anything else. You understand those conditions, and you understand how the waves work. You understand where not to go when it's starting to get a little bit,
Riptides,
I think that's really, it's really, I think surfing lays this sort of foundation for wave photography, because you understand things. And also, I wonder, you feel connected a little bit to it as well.
Yeah. And also you look out. So it's that whole thing of being in the water and just looking out. You're looking at the horizon the whole time, aren't you? You're waiting for the sets to come, and you're looking just for the little bumps on the horizon, which in 20 or 30 seconds time will be a rideable set. And you're just always looking. And as you say, you're always connected because you're just looking at what's coming and getting yourself in a position for where you think it might arrive and what might happen when it will. And it is, And but the safety part of it, you're right about as well. You've just got to be very careful in the water, particularly if it's big. And it's been big quite a lot recently. And that is a thing too. I'm sort of quite a sort of, you know, as you get older, and I'm sort of more aware of that than I used to be when I was sort of younger and sort of learning to surf and all of that. You just think you're indestructible, don't you? And then at some kind of age, you find out you're probably not.
You're definitely not.
Yeah, no, so you just have to. Yeah, or I always err on the side of caution. If I'm not sure, I don't go. I don't go in, particularly after storms and that kind of a thing, because you just got to be careful.
It's more knowing the beach and the way the beach works and knowing the swells and all of that. You know, you've got to know your location ins and out. I mean, here in Harris, I know exactly where I can go and when I can go and what tide and, you know, what swell. And, you know, it's like Scarister here. You just would not go swimming in Scarister. So some people do. And sometimes it is flat calm, but most of the year, it's not something you do. You need to have a board with you to go in there. So you learn these things, and then you also learn your tolerances as well. So I did quite a lot of the photography that for my book and exhibition. It was done when it was snowing that period in, was it March? I think it was this year, and there was some great snowy conditions. Obviously, it was Baltic. There was snow on the beach. So I just had to know my limits. I had to know my kit. I had to know what I was wearing. I had to know when to get out when it was not, you know, I still had to walk back to the car with hands and blocks of feet. So, it's just being aware. And I wonder whether, like being a swimmer or surfer, you've got a lot of these sort of things already laid down for you, you know, over the years of knowledge. And that's maybe built you up already to where you are to be able to go in, like, into the water and do this project that you've been doing. It's a good foundation.
Yeah, and it just gives you a sort of an insight, isn't it? It is. They always say, don't they, with photography, sort of take photographs of the things that interest you, or the things that you're connected to, or the things that resonate with you. And this has always resonated with me. I've always been a water photographer. And then you kind of go, sort of, well, what else is there? What haven't I done? What is there another way in? Is there something that I haven't either experienced or felt? Or it's that kind of a thing, isn't it? And your brain keeps whirring on that kind of a subject, and then you try stuff out. I've worked up to this. It's taken me a long time to do it, in a kind of just sort of mucking about in shorts and sort of running cameras along the tops of waves. Certainly, that's what I've been doing for the last sort of 3 or 4 years. But I haven't sort of had a water housing or anything until I was interested. I always try and do, because of what I do for a living, I always try and do everything on a budget, because you kind of have to. And if you're sort of super freelance, like all actors pretty much are, and all photographers are pretty much to a greater or lesser extent. And so I've always been sort of trying to find pretty much the cheapest way of doing something to get to test out an idea. And so for this, what I did was I got a compact camera. I'm very lucky to, but I do some ambassador. I'm an ambassador for Pentax Ricoh, as I think I mentioned before. And they gave me a compact camera. And one of the things that the Ricoh GR3, for those of you who are interested, it's a great street camera, actually. But I tend to use it at the beach or around, or just when you don't have anything else on you, like the big camera. And it's got a 3-stop neutral density filter on it, sort of built into it. So I bought an aqua pack, it's essentially, you'll know what it's sort of a plastic bag, a very well made plastic bag with a watertight tight seal at the top. But it didn't cost a lot of money. It was like 20-25 quid. And last summer I did a project on it just to see if it would work. And the hit rate was really low, but it was one of those things where I was in a wetsuit, I was in the sea, I was mucking about in the waves, I was sort of trying to get to those little pockets of energy as the waves break. And I knew from that that it would, that there was some potential in it. And then you kind of go, well, how can I soup this up? How can I upscale this and sort of spend a bit more gear? But I didn't go, I should have. Yeah, memo to self, don't do what I've done.
Well,
because it's I bought some not as waterproof as it should have been housing off eBay, but it was the next kind of step up. It cost about 70 quid or something, and I'm not going to mention the brand name because it didn't work, and it worked the first time really well, and then the second time, and it's possible, as always with these things, that it's user error, and so that's one of the reasons why I'm not going to mention it, but it's never happened with anything else that I've ever used. Mm-hmm. And it did result in the demise of my camera. But what a way to go! And also, I got some absolutely beautiful photographs that day. And what for me, even though I lost a camera which I have since replaced, it was absolutely part of the process, because A, memo to self, upgrade your equipment and get something that is really watertight and reliable and all of those things. But B, for me, it proved to me that the idea would work. And yes, that's all I needed. That's all I needed. And that, for me, was the exciting thing. And I'll take the loss of a camera on the way. It's not ideal, but I'll take it, because the joy that I had that day and also the potential for the future was so big that you kind of go, that's an experiment. It's collateral damage. I would rather it didn't happen. And I ummed and ahed about buying a replacement and all of that kind of stuff for some considerable time. But then you kind of work out what you do need to get to the next level in terms of housing, or something that, fingers crossed, touch wood, isn't going to leak, is always a good place to start. And then sort of moved on, and then you move on. So I learned a lot from that, and much as I would rather it hadn't happened, it's a great piece of experience that it did, and I learned a lot, not only in terms of equipment but photographically that day, that there was a huge amount of potential in the project. So I look back on it very fondly, it wasn't a wholly disappointing day. There was a lot of joy in it.
I mean I had the same thing. I'd been experimenting about 4 years before I actually, you know, it's that thing when you start something new, it's not, people see sort of like, you know, the end result, don't they? See me do an exhibition with all these wonderful images. Well, you didn't see the 7 years where I was playing around with my phone. Like you said, you know, my phone was a big, that's how I started. And I did lose a phone. So, yeah, actually.
Oh, did you? Like, yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It was user error. Yeah. I'm not going to blame the kit. It was user error. It was probably more unfortunate than your camera loss, because I was in Harris without any signal. There was no... there was no... Obviously, I had no Wi-Fi. My phone was in the water. It was no longer a phone by the time I got off the beach. And then I realised that I'd been out here. And I was like, nobody's heard from me for about a day. I think I better sort of like think about, how am I going to get in touch with people? Hang on a minute. Yeah. There's no payphones left. What do I do? Well, I either go to the police station and try and remember the phone number. It was quite a long time ago. Yeah. And so I ended up having to drive to Stornoway and buy a new phone in Argos, because that was the only solution I came up with.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was quite inexpensive.
Did you still have all your contacts and all of that kind of stuff? Or did you lose, did all that get wiped out?
I think it would have done, wouldn't it? I just can't remember. Yeah. But yeah, I
unless
can't
it's
remember,
in a cloud, if they had them.
But it was quite a long time ago, and I wasn't that savvy then. So now I have two phones, because I still take my phone into the water quite a lot. I have one that's called my filming phone. And I'll take that into the water without any protection, and I'll just do things, you know. I'm not putting it under, but sometimes I do dip it in a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I'll have my phone that's actually I need to be able to, you know, do things.
Yes, so, yes. Communicate with other humans.
Anyway, the point behind that is that I think once we start doing something, you have to go through those steps of experiment with that. Okay, that worked, but I think I need this, so I'm going to go and buy this, and then I'll add that, or I'll change that out, and that's working. But no, I've had several underwater housings that haven't worked, and it's just a process. And if you're the difference between you not particularly you, anyone who starts something and gets good at it, is that they don't stop at the point of resistance, you know, that point where it's, oh, this is too hard, I've lost a camera, I can't keep doing this, and then they stop. So when you push past that and you go, and actually that was just a learning, I just learned from that, I learned not to buy cheap housings on eBay.
Yes, but you're so right though. Yeah, how interesting. And also what's interesting about that is that every step of that iteration, so every step where something goes wrong, one of the steps is just to stop at that point, isn't it? And kind of go, right, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that again. But off each of those points, there's all sorts of multiple choices you can make about that didn't work. So how do I move this forward? And do I carry on doing what I'm doing, or do I take a slightly right turn? Yeah. And so I'm not much of an inventor, but I would imagine that's part of sort of the how invention works, isn't it? That in the, with the same given sets of circumstances, loads of different minds will think in a completely different way and find multiple different solutions to the problem that has just presented itself. And so,
I love that. Yeah. And the thing that I found really interesting about you and what you're doing here is that it's like you see somebody who's on a path of, I don't even know how to explain this, but like you've got your subject, you've got your photography, and then you're not quite sure where you're going with it, but you've got different things that you do, and then you sort of like you're leaning towards something, and then you're leaning towards something else within that genre, or so, you know. So like, for instance, like you had the sea, you always had the sea, and then you also had your ICM that you were quite interested in. Mm. And now you're sort of like going a bit deeper into the ICM. And it feels to me when I see you doing it, it feels authentic. You're not doing it because it's a trend, or it's because it's, I don't know, because it's what you think people will like or whatever it is. It just feels authentic because you're a sea person. So it makes sense for you to be doing this and to get deeper and deeper. And where that goes, I don't know, but I suspect it will go deeper even, and it will become a bigger thing for you. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, you mentioned it earlier, actually, when we were talking about sort of immersive and immersive theatre, and you said it's just something you've done. And it felt like the right thing to do. And I think that's so true, isn't it? Is there's a degree of post-rationalization that goes on about the whys and the hows. But it is that sense. It's a feeling, isn't it? And just being in the sea and particularly hanging around a breaking wave. I love that place. That place is a really exciting place to be. And not necessarily for everybody, but certainly for me, I've always enjoyed that little spot there, and so whether it's with a bodyboard with my kids or with my other half or whatever, it's just a great place to be in. But it's feeling first, brain second, it's that kind of sense of just following your nose a bit, isn't it? And kind of going, also with these kinds of things, when you do go off these little avenues do end up for you to be creatively a dead end. And that's okay. And because you've had a look, and you've been down it and kind of go, oh, is there anything interesting here? And actually, well, not for me. And so you kind of, you leave the alleyway and you try another one. And so all of these things, and that often can be as exciting as finding out there is a pot of gold at the end of it, because it forces you to look somewhere else. And you kind of, it makes your brain kind of go, right, well, this one hasn't worked for me, or it doesn't suit me heading down this particular direction. So what else? It's that kind of a thing. So just the exploration of it, even if it ends in a dead end, is enough. That part of so much of life is just trying stuff out and seeing if you can make something of it. And if you can't, then well, what else instead maybe? Yeah, this one's been great fun. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, the other thing that I love is that you've done ICM in the water, because you're already doing quite a lot of ICM, and then you've taken it into the water. And I had actually thought about doing ICM in the water, not intentionally, because but sometimes I'd done it by accident, because, you know, you get sometimes that happens. You're about to get mashed by something.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You got your finger on the button, you're taking an image and your camera's gone like this and it's an ICM. Oh, it's actually quite beautiful. Yeah, but it's just not my thing. It's just not my thing. So I've done my thing in my way and you have done your thing in your way. And actually, talking about that, what I really like is that we're both doing something very similar. And I think we talked about this when you were up and I said, we should do a workshop and call it Messing About in the Water. Yeah. And then I thought about it and went, oh, no, health and safety. Too complex
too complex. You're so right about that, though. Yeah, goodness me.
The thought's still there. I think the thought behind that is that I'm always like really open and welcoming to other people doing the same thing that I'm doing. Because there's room for everybody doing their own thing in their own way, isn't there? So therefore, if anybody wanted to come over to Harris, it'd have to be here because I'm not leaving this island ever again. I've decided it's the best place in the world. Yeah. And to have a experience of in water photography. In fact, I did a one-to-one recently and the lady came along. We had the best day ever. And she had all the kit actually, and she hadn't had time to practice. She'd used it once. I think it was abroad in the Maldives. And she came over here and she said, this is what I want to do. So we had an absolute ball. I've got to say, it was a beautiful day. But to encourage other people into doing this if they're interested. But the key to it is it something that you love, or is it something that you love the idea because Margaret and Bill are doing it so well in their own way? So think of that sort of separation. There's a lot of people that will love it because they love the sea and they love photography. It matches quite well, doesn't it? But I do think there's that thing where we should really help and uplift other people doing things because it's just better for everyone, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about joy, isn't it? And I do love your whole thought about messing about and mucking about. I do think so much of photography is about that, is just trying stuff out, having fun, enjoying yourself, and seeing what you can make. Yeah. And there is a positivity in that that I think is really useful. I couldn't agree more.
I think it's easier in the water because it's much more fun in the water. I think photography's got a little bit serious. Well, it is serious, isn't it?
Yeah,
but it can get too serious in that it can stop you enjoying creating, and it can actually stop you creating because people are so wound up with like, I've got to get this image. I'm here on this beach. I've got to get that image. I can't leave this beach, and all of this kind of seriousness going on. And letting go is the part of the process of creating an amazing image, isn't it? So once we let go of that need to create an amazing image, the need to create images that, sort of validate you in some way, we let go of all of that, then we can start to enjoy. And I suppose when you're in the water, you've got to let go of that because you're going to slip and fall. You're going to laugh, and it's not so serious, is it? Or I don't know. Maybe it is. I'm not sure.
I hadn't thought of that. That is, but you're right. It is just that the medium, sort of the waterness of it, just makes it because as kids, that's what you do, isn't it?
That's it. Yeah.
You do. You're just splashing about, sort of mucking about, and splashing each other and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that's really interesting. I hadn't thought of that at all. But I have no doubt you're right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, really good.
Yeah, I was going to say I usually am, but I probably shouldn't say that on this podcast. Actually, maybe I can. Maybe I can say that.
Yeah, well, it's your podcast. You can say what you like.
This is very true. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I think we'll probably end on that note.
Great.
But thank you. Thank you so much. And we'll get everybody to check out your I think it's on Instagram, are you?
It is at the moment. It's a very much a sort of ongoing current thing. But I have done a lot of it. So there's plenty to come. And it's been great fun. And I'll stick it on my website in a bit, but it won't be for the first few months. So Instagram's a place to go for it.
a little bit busy doing other things, I think, at the moment. So, yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for chatting with me again. And we'll catch up again at some point.
Yeah, brilliant. And listen, good luck with Creative Light. Have the best possible time. And I know you will. So, yeah,
thank you.
Wishing you all the best for that.
Thank you.